One. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Big MX Radio Podcast. I am your host, Brad Gebhart. With me on the line, a filming superstar within the industry, someone who captures the magic that is professional motocross, even at the amateur level as well. He is a native of Buds Creek, Maryland, and just outside of Baltimore, where he is currently trying to hide from the Wheelie Boys themselves. Wade Rayner, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Brad. You're already making me feel way too good about myself. All right, I gotta keep myself on a low level. That way, I push myself to try and be better. You know, I don't want to get too comfortable.
Fair enough. Well, I am only trying to boost you from the doldrums and the verbal abuse that you receive from our friends over at Verb Moto. Because hey, like I love the guys at Verb, but yeah, I think just having been around them last year, I feel like they like to pick on you a little bit, and you're a little bit glutton for punishment, basically throwing your hat in the ring with some of the most renowned filming superstars of this entire sport. I'll commend you for that. And yeah, I would say that you hang in there with those guys, big guys. So I would say you're right on par with those guys on many respects, and you're willing to come on this show, which gives you an added bonus in my book. So welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. I mean, I try to do my best regardless of the situation. I don't mind taking the punishment. You know, they've been in it far, far longer than I have. So whatever they say, sometimes there's a little bit of a learning experience in there. You just got to look for it.
Oh, if I've learned anything through the many locker rooms that I've grown up in over the years is that when somebody's mean to you, that typically means that they actually like you, and they'd only just like you to improve and continue to grow, and you as well as I know. It's almost kind of like an unspoken language between guys, that if you're sort of like if there's a little some good-natured ribbing and teasing going on, that's almost like a message of acceptance and that sort of thing. So safe to say you've been welcomed into the fray over at Verb.
I'm glad because, you know, every coach I've ever had has told me that exact same thing. I never believed it for a while. I'm like, these guys are just dicks, honestly.
Yeah.
But no, we're good. And it's, you know, they definitely care and they hope to see me succeed. At least I hope they do. You know what I mean?
Certainly, and they're never going to be as mean as we were back in the day at our rookie parties for hockey. I know you come from like somewhat of a northern state. You might even experience winter, quote unquote winter, as far as what the Americans consider to be winter each year. So, but I won't regale you with too many details of the stories of the terrible things that we put the rookie hockey players through. But everyone has to experience it. But the people who are listening to the Big MX Radio podcast probably not super interested in the hazing rituals of junior hockey up in Canada. What they're probably more curious about is that the Buds Creek National is in the rearview mirror. Buds Creek has been a absolute staple on the series for many, many years. It's played host to some incredible battles. It's the favorite track of many racers, not just in Maryland, but also Florida and many of the East Coast states as well. Mechanicsville, Maryland is an absolute haven of motocross. It also happens to be your home track. I give the floor to you a little bit here to sort of set the scene for us. And I'd also just sort of give a little bit of Cole's notes of the Wade Rayner Buds Creek connection. You've been carted off this racetrack in an ambulance, I'd assume, or at least in a mobile medical mule. You've also gone and watched some iconic races over the years as a fan, and then you've also gone past the velvet rope. Although there are no velvet ropes in motocross, it's more of a kind of a figment of your imagination sort of thing. You went across the picket fence, across the banners, and were able to be on the infield taking video only just a few days ago.
Yeah, you know, I did, I was in an ambulance, and then I was in a helicopter, and that took me to the nearest hospital, which was a little bit further away. I rode there a lot, and
amen.
Just happened to have one off day that was pretty late. The track was rough, and I crashed on the jump that is right next to the starting line. Like, you come out of the start,
yep.
You turn left, and there's a step up there. I crashed on the step up. I knocked myself out for, like, 5 minutes. According to my friends, I don't really remember most of it, really like any of it. I do remember asking if they would drive me to the hospital because I thought the helicopter ride was going to be pretty expensive. They said no.
Was it?
Just, you know, in case you were wondering. But no, actually, in Maryland, it is a public service. So I didn't pay a dime for the helicopter ride, and that's not even because of my insurance. It was amazing.
It was insurance.
The state police actually flew me out, and I wish I could remember it because those helicopters are sweet. But I don't really remember much. So
fair enough. I've I've seen someone leave a track in a helicopter about 4 times, and it's never a good sight. So
no, thankfully, I turned out pretty much okay. I mean, at least as close to normal as I could be, and as close to normal as I was before, you know, which is not super normal. So
yeah, was your face always like that?
Yeah, I did break my cheekbone as well, but, you know, it didn't make me any prettier. I'll say that.
All right, fair enough. So when was your first, Buds Creek experience? Like, how young are you? Do you recall going up to someone and trying to get an autograph and getting turned down for that? Before we get into breaking down the race a little bit and stuff like that, let's go with Wade Rayner, the fan.
My history there is probably not as long as you would imagine. I got in the sport pretty late. I always knew about Buds Creek. I kind of grew up in the ski, snowboard, wakeboard, surfing, skateboarding industries.
Okay.
So my introduction to motocross was late. My wife raced motocross. So
still faster than you really, to this day.
Yeah, she's always and forever will be faster than me, and that's fine. I'm totally okay with it. That's why I use a camera now. But, you know, I got into it pretty late, and, you know, I want to say 10-ish years ago would have probably been one of my first experiences at Buds Creek, and I actually rode there before I ever went to watch a race.
Really?
Absolutely terrifying, to be honest with you. That track... It can be a little scary when you're not that good at dirt bikes. So I'm not that good at dirt bikes, obviously. I got flown out of there. So it was a very cool experience to ride on the same track that everyone you watch on Saturday gets to ride on. But you realize very quickly why they go so fast and why they're professionals. Because I was humbled extremely quickly.
Fair enough. So the first time you would have gone there would have been like 2014?
Yeah, I might have been 16 or, yeah, maybe a little bit later than that. So maybe my timeline was a little off. But my first time there, like I said, it was actually going to ride there before I watched a race there.
Interesting.
I did watch, you know, did get to see a couple local races there probably the same time. There was a local race going on. I did not race because I was not very good, but I went there and rode. There was a guy by the name of Kevin Krine. There was a memorial race for him there. Yep. So his memorial race was there. I attended with my wife, girlfriend at the time, you know, before she was my wife, but she raced.
Happy birthday to your son, by the way. Jet is 3
today. He's finally 3. He got to visit the home of Gravedigger, as he would say.
Nice.
So he had a nice little day.
I love that. Well, Wade and your nice little family enjoying the sport of motocross. I love it.
We all love it.
your story sort of reminds me of a similar story that I had because for here in Manitoba, it's been a kind of like a nonstop sort of like you know, like those commercials where like there's that guy that has like the $20 or a couple dollars on like a fishing rod and is always getting pulled away. Well, that's how the Canadian Nationals have been with Manitoba's National. Like we have it and then it gets pulled away and we have it again and oh, it gets pulled away again. Or it changes tracks. And so when I was very young, it was at Grunthal. Grunthal is one of our, and it's on YouTube. Guaranteed MX has a couple of, they have both Morden and Grunthal races posted up there. You should go to check them out. They got the old announcers on there, which are always gold. Those guys, Brian Coster and what was the other guy's name? Anyway, so I went, like, there used to be a track, or there still is a track, called Morden, and they used to have this section that we raced, and I've raced there since I was about 10 years old, and they started having a national there when I was about 16 or 17. And there was this one section that had 3 doubles heading up the hill, And, like, it had always been three doubles. And it was complete, like, there was no way anyone would have looked at this and seen it anything other than three doubles until the local boys show, or the pro guys, the national boys show up, Bobby Canary, Paul Carpenter, and the rest of the guys, Colton Fasciotti. They see those three doubles, and guess what they saw?
Triple-triple.
That's right. Yep. I was absolutely flabbergasted, and so were the rest of the local pros, because that's who sets that line in, right? They're like, oh, yeah, that's the fast way to go through that. And right. I just remember Colton Fasciotti lifting the front tire and just going, yeah, yeah. And it's like, and the local pros just being like, I guess we got to do that now.
So while, you know, Bud's Creek is a super gnarly track, yeah. There really isn't anywhere like that at Bud's, mm-hmm. where your local fast guy, your local pro, who our local pros are like Justin Rodbell, Tyler Stepik, Jack yep. Rogers, Max Sanford, all those guys.
Legit guys.
They're hitting the same lines as the pros do on any given weekend, and you can go there and probably hit those as well if you, you know, have any sort of speed to your riding.
Yeah,
I've seen C-class kids hit Big Gulp, and that's the biggest jump there. That's also the only one I've never hit, but, you know.
I've looked at everything else. I don't want anything to do with it. So.
Yeah, I don't. At one point, it got really, really big, and it also got super scary when they reversed the track and you jumped down it. Mm-hmm. That was, like, one of the scariest things I've ever seen because the landing was, like, just straight down. It probably what's the big one at Ironman?
Godzilla.
Yeah, it's probably not, you know, nearly as big as that. But
Godzilla, you know, it's just a big send, like you, and the landing yeah. is like it's like a you could it's like an aircraft carrier. It's huge. It's Big Gulp is like you're jumping to a spot.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen many of people crash there. Cody Groves. Some of my friends have crashed there. I've never crashed there. But, you know, I also never jumped it. So that would probably be why. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, Bud's, there's nowhere really on the track that your normal A rider, your local pro, your B rider, even some of the C riders can't do. That's like one of the really – that's what I think is really cool about that track mm-hmm. is they don't really change it much. They do make subtle changes here and there, but the jumps remain the same, and it's gotten way better in the last few years now that Ezra has taken over, which is John Beasley. It's his son. He's taken over the track. He's done a really good job with it, and just the quality of the track has gotten better. The prep is better. It's more, I think it's a little bit more organized, and he definitely he cares in what he's doing, which is it's good to see. Not that John didn't, and not that John didn't put on a good event, but Ezra really goes above and beyond in my opinion.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, but not to besmirch the good name of his father, but it's nice to see someone kind of carry that torch forward and possibly even improve on what was done previously. I don't think there's anything wrong with that whatsoever. The event itself and the track, it's got so much history. It's Henry Hill, it's Bud's Creek first moto with, James Stewart also, but and a second moto when he went from last to first. Same event that Tim Ferry ended up taking a moto away from the great Ricky Carmichael. Of course, Carmichael comes out the next moto and wraps up the overall. But it's a track that has had so many great races on. I think there's a lot of guys, especially Florida guys, that really feel comfortable there. The dirt is just a certain way. And to me, I always feel like when you're in Bud's Creek, even though I don't think even Travis even ever won Bud's Creek. I always kind of like when, cause you're in Maryland, you're in Travis's backyard. And of course that's Travis Pastrana we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that he has. I'd have to do a quick Google search on that to see if he has ever won, but there is a ton of history there. And I mean, honestly, one of the things that always comes to my mind, I was not there at this time. There, I know many people that were, but they had destinations there in 2007 or 2008.
Seven.
One of those two. And that was when RV just crushed everyone on yep. a little bike by like quite a bit.
No, yeah, it wasn't close.
Yeah, it wasn't.
There's actually
wasn't
a really good documentary about that.
Yeah,
race.
It's something in a day. I can't remember.
The World in a Day,
like
10 years
in a day, or something.
Yeah,
like that.
10 years in a day. That's what it was.
Yeah, I've seen that multiple times. That is a great.
It's a Troy Adamitis creation. So, like,
yeah, I mean that guy doesn't. He doesn't really miss. I miss that guy, but he doesn't really miss when he makes a movie.
Nope. So let's talk about like we're gonna get to the race in general. We'll go through some results. Let's go to something that you wanted to discuss, and that's the that's Captain America. And in so many ways, there's always a Captain America. Tell me about it.
So I thought about this because it was something I noticed while I was at the track. For a really long time, it was Eli Tomac for the longest time. No matter where Eli was on the track, no matter how he was doing, it didn't really matter. People were cheering for him. And I think people cheered for him because he was beating whatever foreign rider was riding at the time. He was the guy, whether it was Marv, whether it was Dylan Ferrandis, you know, obviously he hasn't really gotten to beat, you know, to race yet. But it was really just whenever he was winning and doing so well, the crowd went nuts. Like, and we all have seen Eli Tomac. He does not have the Aaron Plessinger personality that you would think. Like, I think when I think of Aaron Plessinger, you think of America. But
yeah.
I think there's kind of a Captain America torch that Eli held for a really long time because he was the guy. He was the American guy. And one thing I started to notice it at Southwick, you know, he was not there. Yeah, he was not. Eli was not at Southwick, but he was at Bud's Creek. And what I noticed was that the people really kind of gravitated towards Chase Sexton now.
Yep.
You know, he's the one that can beat Jet. He's
like
the
great white hope.
Hunter. You know, he's the top American 450 guy. And I think, like, it has, like, a Captain America persona because everyone that's from the United States, I guess they feel united behind Chase Sexton. At one point, it was Eli Tomac. It was whoever was beating Chad Reed. You know, you can go down the list however far you want. There's always someone that was a fan favorite, regardless of their personality, mm-hmm. and regardless of, like, their, you know, well, now it's internet persona, but, you know, just like I said, their personality. And I think that torch is really being passed to Chase Sexton now. I posted a YouTube video yesterday. And one of the shots I have, it was right after Chase had passed Hunter. The crowd went nuts when he passed Hunter going over a jump called Scrub This, which is a tabletop at the bottom of the hill.
Right.
So they went nuts. The next lap, I moved around a little bit because I noticed how crazy the fans went every time Chase Sexton went around. I actually walked into the infield and shot over top of them. And he came over, Scrub This, made a right-hand turn to the step up, you know, and then went up to there's a triple step up right after that, and it's my favorite shot of the weekend. He comes by, goes into the right hand turn, and it's just everyone on the fence is going nuts. There's guys waving t-shirts, there's flags, everything's going. And even when he got to the podium after, it was like that whole, all those people, they followed him and they went nuts when he made it on the podium, and they went nuts whenever he went around the track or made a pass or whatever. And I think, you know, that he's becoming the Captain America that Eli Tomac was, because everywhere Eli was, people went nuts. But now I think you're starting to see that happen for Chase.
No, I agree. And it's, I think in so many ways, like this is like, people often forget that this is the American National Motocross Championship. Yeah. And like, I'll be honest, like when I watch hockey, as soon as my favorite team, my Winnipeg Jets, are gone, my attention immediately goes to which team has the most Canadians on it, because I want to see the Stanley Cup won by my home nation. Like that
yeah,
is the most amount of, like, my, the, that's my, the athletes from my home country going out and getting the cup. It's more often than not an American team. Obviously, there's a whole lot more American teams than there is Canadian teams in the NHL. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think you saw that even in, I guess the 80s, almost every, almost all the national guys or the top national guys were all American. You had RJ and Wardy and Bailey and Lachine and O'Mara, all those guys, they're all American. I think the first one that really threatened that, obviously, was JMB. He comes over and everyone, they love Jeff Stanton, but... and I love Jeff Stanton. I've had a lot of good conversations with him. He doesn't really have that charisma that just captivates an audience. I think he was a lot of the reason why people sort of got behind him was this is the guy who's has the best shot of representing the United States of America and putting it to him. Same thing with Damon Bradshaw. And obviously Bradshaw had a little bit more brashness on and off the track that kind of brought in more sort of fanfare and whatnot. But I think a lot of it also had to do is that he was a true blood American who loved his country and people connect with that. Same thing with Aaron Plessinger. And every time there's been sort of a threat to that, I think the American fans, and rightfully so, get behind their countrymen. It's kind of cool to see.
Definitely. And like you were saying with Bradshaw, he has more of a, personality where I feel that Plessinger has that same draw.
Right.
And I think when, the 250 class has Deegan, obviously, and people go absolutely nuts.
We're going to get there.
So, I'm staying on the point here because when I think about national pride and stuff like that, you obviously have Deegan holding the flag, and then you have AP, who's just they're true red blood American. There's the other guys who are a little bit quieter that still get they're the guy who's beating whatever other foreigner. Like I said, Chase, Eli, Eli is definitely less of a personality than Chase, but when you think of Aaron Plessinger versus Chase, obviously AP has way more of a personality. And, I think we might start seeing that with Levi Kitchen or Chance Hymus in the next couple of years, where they may be the ones to take that spot. Cause you're always going to have that polarizing figure. That's AP, that's Deegan, that's, whoever you can think of that is a true personality of, their charisma and everything is out there and it's big. So
no, I totally agree. I think that the fans will find someone who truly represents the heartbeat and it's a reflection of them. I think a guy like Aaron Plessinger has certainly done that. I think that there's a certain segment of fans that absolutely adore everything that Hayden Deegan does, especially his riding. You can't take anything away from the way that kid rides a motorcycle, the speed, the intensity. And I think so much of the sort of the extracurriculars that he takes part in sort of social media or on the podiums is first of all, I see a young kid who has sort of been brought up in sort of with a massive chip on his shoulder as far as wanting to prove a lot of people that say he just got that because of this or he just got that because of that. No, it's hard work. It's because you can be given a lot of opportunities and a lot of support, and you put me on that motorcycle and give me that amount of time to get good at riding a motorcycle. I'm to tell you right now, it's probably not happening. Hayden Deegan has done a lot of really special things on a motorcycle, and I think he's going to mature. And people often forget. I don't know how closely you were watching Supercross Motocross in the late 90s, early 2000s, during the early portion of Ricky Carmichael's career, but he had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder as well. Maybe not to the same degree that Hayden does, but there was some interviews there where you could definitely tell that RC liked him he liked himself some RC. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that whatsoever. But no, I think that it's a cool conversation. I think that it's something that people will track for many years to come. As long as there's an American National Motocross Championship, there's always going to be a Captain America, someone who can defend that sort of defend the nation a little bit. I think there's even James Stewart and Chad Reed. I think there's people who sided with James Stewart for no other reason that he's the American.
I would agree with that. I mean, obviously, it's hard not to have liked James at some point after you watch him ride, like, one time at all, ever. You're like, damn, this guy's awesome.
You're right. Watching Roddy KX125 for 2 seconds, you're like, I love the guy. I'd take a bullet.
You're like, dang, I'm never, ever, ever, I can't even do that in my dream. You know what I mean? Like,
no, if I dreamt about that, James would wake me up, slap me, and say, how dare you? And like, then I'd be like, how'd you get in my house? Dude. I'm not mad. I just don't want to. I just want to know how you got in my house.
I just want to let you know that you're never going to do that.
I do have a KX125 in my garage, though. And it's all...
I know, and it's pretty nice. I'm not going to lie. I've seen a couple pictures. It's rather nice.
I gotta get better with my camera to take some even nicer pictures or some video like you do. But
you know, we might know a couple guys.
We might know some people who can kind of maybe get that thing the proper cover that it needs. Let's just dump straight into the 250 class. We'll talk 450s a little bit later on, but let's get straight into the 250s. Your overall winner is Levi Kitchen. That was his third overall for the year, which is very impressive. The fact that he's won three nationals. He's second in points, but the championship is wrapped up by Hayden Deegan. He goes 110, technically wrapped up the championship after Moto 1, but due to some technicalities, and obviously if he had done something terrible or incurred some sort of points penalty in the second moto, he would have then, they weren't able to award it to him until the end of the day. But either way, third on the day, a podium for Hayden Deegan and a championship. This kid is really rounding himself into a threat indoors and out. I expect his fanfare to only increase. It's hard not to like this kid. I really have a hard time seeing anything negative with how he carries himself and the fitness. Even when he first came in, I wouldn't say I was a naysayer, but I'm like, I need to see him prove it. I need to see, like, I don't know, like, cause I didn't pay attention super close to his amateur career. I need to see something prove it. He's done nothing but prove it from the very beginning. He's got fitness, he's got speed, he's got style. He is as advertised, and good on him for getting that championship. It was a dominant performance, and he wraps it up early.
Yeah, I've been pretty stoked on Hayden Deegan for a while. I got to watch him ride a super mini up close and film him at Minio's a couple years ago down in Florida. And then I watched him switch over when he was riding the Star 250 in the amateur days. And I vividly remember a last to first ride where he crashed. I want to say it was like the first turn or very, very early on. I don't recall which, but he came all the way back. Won the moto, if I'm not mistaken. Don't exactly quote me there. He did for sure win the title, and he beat Daxton Bennick at the time, along with a handful of other pretty gnarly dudes. And I was like, man, this kid's the real deal. Like, it, as you said earlier, like, he got a lot of hate because, oh, obviously his dad's Brian Deegan. They got a ton of money. And, you know, there's no, you can't deny that. But regardless how much money you have, I've seen a ton of kids that are in a Renegade, you know, show hauler with this double stacker trailer, and they get like 35th every moto, and, you know, good on them if that's what they want to do. Like, there's no hate here coming from me. Everyone loves moto. I love moto, but you, just because you have money, you're not automatically going to be this good. And it's really impressive. And honestly, every time I shoved a camera in his face as an amateur, he gave me the best interviews of anyone. It was, you know, hey man, tell me about that moto. And it wasn't, oh yeah, it was good. You know, it was like a full rundown, and I'm sure that has come from a little bit of coaching from Brian or whoever, or just him being in front of a camera his entire life on their YouTube channel, mm-hmm. You know, or whoever Brian had, whatever he had going on at the time. And he always gave a good interview. He was super personable. He had a personality. He rips on a dirt bike. Dude's the full package. I'm not going to lie. Like, I've been pretty stoked on him for a long time, and I told people this And I'm like, this kid's the real deal. When he comes in, it's going to be a problem. And it has been. And I mean, it's like he was throwing whips. He pulled the whole shot. So at Bud's Creek, come out of the start, you make a left. There's a step up. You go through like 8 pack of rollers, 10 pack of rollers. And there's the finish line table. First lap, he pulled the whole shot through probably one of the fattest whips of the day. Well, even, of press day, honestly. Like, it was fat. And he threw his leg off, and it was
what
like,
about
all right, this is.
Southwick with that scrub?
Dude, that. I don't even know what to call that because, like,
I don't. I'd
that
call it
track is
unintentional, is what
gnarly.
that was.
It was. I'm not going to lie. I think even he would probably admit it was unintentional. But, like, for him to be able to hit that, go as side. Like, I don't know. You might be able to hear it in the video, but I probably gasped. I'm like, oh, man. Like,
Yeah.
this is. They were going fast, and it was him and Levi, and they were doing battle on the first lap, and it was just like, dang, like, he saved that, and like I said, he threw a massive whip at Buds on the first lap, and it was over. I'm like, yeah, they might as well just, like, he can pull off now and just give him the trophy because it's done. Like, this dude's feeling it. It's on. And he showed it and pulled like a 20, what, 6, 7 second gap. In the first moto, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, no, he was gone. It was curtains, and yeah, he was just demoralizing people all day. And it's what's impressive to me is his good tracks have stayed his good tracks, and the tracks that he's struggled on are the tracks where he's become more dominant. He like
Yeah.
he's almost he's turned his weaknesses into strengths. He's like, oh no, like you thought that you'd have me covered there. I'm actually more of a problem there now than I was at the at say Washougal, where last year he was extremely dominant. Like when he shows up to
Yep.
Southwick and he is not only like everyone's like, oh, that's where someone can make up some points. Nope.
Yeah, he shut that down pretty quickly. And, I mean, he beat Tom Vial there, and Tom Vial won last year. Tom Vial's always been good in the sand, obviously coming from the GP series.
For
But,
sure.
I mean, just to show, it just shows how much he works and how much the desire for him to win is like super clear, and he's got a lot of passion, and it's cool to see. And I think he, people always give him some grief over the podium interviews, but I really think that he just like tries to rattle guys, and it's funny. And I mean, I've always heard a story of, Cooper Webb was the same way. There is a story that I heard of him. I want to say it was. They had an MXGP at Charlotte in like 2017. There's a story of him. He beat on the doghouse next to
Hurlings.
on the hurlings, and he was like, he asked him if he was like ready to do battle or something like that. And you see that in Hayden Deegan. It's cool to see because it was like, who no one does that. No one really has personality, but it's starting to. Like I said, I think he's going to be a problem for the rest of these guys for a very long time. So it's cool to see, not to take anything away from Levi, Tom, or Chance, or really anyone, but it was cool to see. He's interesting. He gets people in the sport, and there's a lot of people that really like him. There are some people that hate him, but I think there's a lot more people that like him.
Absolutely. And yeah, like he can do this as long as he would like. It is never going to come down to support, because if push really comes to shove for Hayden Deegan, he can support himself in his own ventures and a racing program. So it's not going to like he will be able to call his shot of when he puts the microphone down, or if he chooses to continue this performance. He has shown speed, he has shown fitness, he has shown personality, and I find it so funny how like if you have say like a perfect example, it was Ryan Villopoto during his career, a little like he was very like very or even Ryan Dungey for that matter, very robotic, thanks to sponsors, thanks the good Lord Jesus Christ for keeping me safe out there, every single time, very cookie cutter, like and just sort of like almost like a buttoned up version of a motocross racer, which is a kind of ironic in the fact that motocross is in many people's eyes an action sport. a sport for the young, a sport for the brash, a sport for the people who take risks, and then you expect the athletes to be these like cookie cutter
corporate robots,
which I don't think those two things mix well at all. But yeah, as soon as you get a guy that shows the personality and like, hey, I'm not only going to beat you, but I'm going to tell you about it. Then all of a sudden especially I think it's more of the old head sort of kind of come out of the woodwork saying, that's not how you win a race. Like if you score a touchdown, you just hand the ball to the referee. Well, last time I checked, they never made any bobbleheads out of, Barry Sanders handing the ball to the ref. Although now that I say that, it's probably out there somewhere. Although the Gronk spike is probably, it has a cult following in and of itself. Like I don't think there's anything wrong with enjoying winning a race. I don't think that anything that Hayden's done has really crossed any lines. Like saying somebody's cooked, much meaner things are said during adult safe hockey and will be said that way in 2 days' time when I try and our team makes our bid for the Division 14 Summer Championship against the Don Cherios. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I love it. I like to see it. I think it brings out the best in his competitors. Like, I don't know how you feel about this, but like, if Hayden Deegan lights a fire under the ass of Levi Kitchen, Tom Vial, and Chance Hymus, is that not just a good thing?
I think it's a great thing, and it's funny that you bring that up because I was listening to the Pulp Show earlier today.
Not familiar.
And what's that?
Not familiar.
Oh yeah, never heard of it.
All right, cool. I'm kidding.
No, his mechanic, Brent Duffy, was on there, and he was saying how Hayden and Levi are actually pretty good friends. And he's like, I think that Hayden says these – well, not anymore.
Well, yeah, but they were teammates. Like, you can't, like, totally hate the guy. Like, honestly, Barsha and Tomac would probably still go for a beer, well, maybe in a couple of years from now. But, yeah, Garrett, they're going for a beer.
Yeah, Emo would give that one a couple of years. But no, I think, you know, he kind of mentioned that he thinks that Hayden does these things to just kind of get a reaction out of him and see what it is. And he mentioned that he's like, well, he said Chance is a little bit reserved, a little bit quieter. And he's like, that's the only one where I don't know if you're going to have the same reaction, you know, that you might from a Levi Kitchen or a Tom Vial or whoever. He's like, he might push that one a little bit too much, which I thought was funny to hear. But yeah, like you were saying, I do enjoy it. I think the sport probably needs it. You know, we don't want all these cookie cutter, you know, corporate robots. This is a sport. I'm sure it's kind of a rebellious sport, just like every other action sport. And there's no point in having any fun if you're just going to go up there and thank your sponsors. It's not, doesn't have the same effect if you ask me.
Well, yeah. And I'll tell you this. I think if you are going to mention those sponsors, but you're also going to bring a certain amount of brashness and some entertainment to it. I've watched a lot of races after the fact. More often than not, if I end up having to watch a race in archive, or if I happen to be at the race and then I watch it afterwards, I'm not usually quick to like actually watch or listen to the post-race interviews, because they usually don't offer much aside from like, here's what happened. Thanks to God for keeping me safe. My Dunlops are hooking up. Hayden Deegan has made post-race interviews watchable again. Like, there's people who are like, most of the time I'd fast forward through them. I want to see what this kid has to say. That has to have value for FMF and Yamalube and whoever else is on his jersey, as well as whoever else he mentions. Like, that in and of itself is worth its weight as far as mentioning the sponsors. So not only is he providing more value for his sponsors, but he's getting more screen time for those people, or people who are actually going to watch it, because there's a difference between an interview that nobody watches and one that somebody are all glued to. I think it's a good thing.
I would love to know how many Yamahas he has sold personally. I mean, you know, if you think back, I don't know, I'm not going to put an exact date on it, but late mid 2000s, whatever, how many Suzukis did James Stewart sell? You know what I mean? Like, I kind of feel like we're in the same era. Like, at that time, everyone had a Suzuki. You know how many people I know have, you know, 2010 Suzukis or whatever, you know, time frame around that era. I mean, he might have been on a Yamaha that year, but, you know, whatever. You get what I'm getting at here.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. We'll get off Deegs here in a second, but no, I like what he's doing. I think he's put himself in a position of momentum and of sort of a, I think he's got some mental high ground over a lot of his closest competitors. Not that he, I think that like, not that I think those guys think they can't beat him, but I think he definitely has given himself the upper edge. Obviously, if you're winning championships and races, you're obviously in their heads a little bit when the gate drops. And we will see what happens when he gets joined by a certain Ken Roczen in the 250 class as in the near future, as just 4 or 5 days from now. Ken Roczen, much like Ricky Carmichael did in 2001, is dropping down onto a 250F for the, he'll be racing the first time on a 250F for the first time since 2014.
I think that's what they said, if I'm not mistaken.
That's awesome. 10 years out of the class. It would have been carbureted, I think. No, not carbureted.
Yeah. Oh, they were carbureted for a long time.
I think the 250Fs were EFI by then. It's 14. The Kawasaki in like 2009 is EFI. So 5 years later, I'd like to think.
Yeah,
the
they were
had that down pat.
They were definitely lagging a little bit behind in the EFI department.
I think it still might have been a kickstart though. If for fuck's sakes, if his 250F in 2014 was push button start, and he's kicking it RMZ, that is which, upsetting.
I believe it would have, because he would have been on a KTM. No,
yeah, he would have been on a KTM. I'm gonna look up the 2014 KTM 250.
Yeah, I'm excited to
tell,
see
tell me
how
what you
Ken
think
is going
to tell me about this situation with Ken Roczen. What are your thoughts?
I'm excited to see that.
EFI.
I think it's cool.
And there's no kickstart.
Yeah, I think it's of course still kickstart to this day, but
no, there's no kickstart.
I think it's really cool that he's no kickstart.
Kickstart on the KTM.
Yep.
That is insane.
That, at that time, would have been no kickstart EFI.
Anyway,
he'll get there one day.
Suzuki,
I have hope. Yeah, no, I'm super excited to see how he does. I think, just judging how good of a racer he is, how good of a rider he is, and also I saw my buddy Blake Keith posted a video of him riding down in Florida, and he was ripping. I honestly think he's gonna be around the top five. I would love to see him push for a podium. Do I think it's going to happen? I don't know. You have, you know, you're going to be competing if, you know, with Hayden, with Vial, with Kitchen, with Hymus, with Jalik Swole, all those guys who consistently ride 250s, who know the class, they're used to the chaos of the 250 class, where Roczen has been in the old man's class or the 450 class, definitely not the old man's class, but you kind of, I feel like there's definitely a difference in their thought processes of how they want to race, how much they're willing to die for a win or a top five or whatever versus Ken Roczen. But, you know, if you think of just
2013,
how good he is, yeah, his previous success, I think he's got a good chance at coming, being in the top five is what my hopes are for Ken Roczen.
Yeah, it was 2013 the last time he was in this class. So 11 years removed, and I think that he's got the right mindset. He's not going to be run down from the championship. It, like, not to say that it means more to him than it does to the rest of the guys. Like, the championship is gone. Everybody else is sort of racing for pride and results and the bonuses that come along with it. Although I'm sure a Suzuki win bonus. Not to say that he's not in the running for a win, but like, I don't know if that's totally in the cards. Switching to a 250F and then racing against the best in the world, I'm going to give a little bit of a nod to Hayden Deegan, Levi Kitchen, and Tom Vial, as well as a Chance Hymus. But I certainly think that he can, like, I think he's going to get good starts. I think he has superior race craft to, like, oh, I don't know, at least 35 of these guys that I'm looking at. I could see him going 4-5 for fifth overall, and that'd be an awesome day.
I think that would be a great day for him. And
plus,
like said,
I think
the
Suzuki looks good with black plates on it.
I think it does. And we haven't seen one up front for quite a while. But no, you made a good point. His race craft is definitely a lot better than,
like, think of him on the first lap. Like, they always talk about the first lap in a 250 national is like crazy and wild. I can see him cutting through that bullshit like a hot knife through butter.
I mean, he's always gotten good starts too.
Yeah,
pretty much all the time. So I think if he can start up front, you know he's in shape. It's Ken Roczen. I mean, obviously he took a little bit of time off, but I still think you see him get a good start. You know, and like I said, I do believe he's in great shape. He always is. He's pretty much a freak athlete. If he gets a good start, I see him running up front. I do believe that Levi, Tom, Hayden, Chance, maybe Jalik are probably going to be a little bit better. But I still see him.
I think Ken
Roczen
is faster
than
Jalik Swole. I do. I feel that way.
I do too.
With all due respect to Jalik Swole, I think Ken's got more speed.
I 100% agree. I'm just thinking a guy who's been in the class all year that has to have some weight for what he's about to experience, if you ask
me.
Fair enough.
I am asking you, so that helps. So I think that's that'll be interesting to see. And we have a 450 championship that is not sewn up, but it's close. Like there, we got it's over a moto lead right now for Chase Sexton, the number four. He's got 11 moto victories to Hunter's 3. He's got 6 overall wins to Hunter's 0. The two of them, their average finish is actually quite close. But it's just been each round that, like, even when Chase Sexton hasn't won, he's put himself ahead of Hunter Lawrence. And the last few races, they've sort of swapped out. So that's like kind of like basically like a net zero as far as making up any points as far as Hunter's considered. And I fully expect this is a track that I think that Chase Sexton does well on. Like, let's also like kind of bring that in, is that I think that this is a Chase Sexton track. Ironman, it's fast. It's got big jumps. It requires someone to be a technician. On top of that, this screams Chase Sexton to me. What are your thoughts? Final round.
I agree.
Championship on the line.
I agree. This is Chase's championship to lose at this point.
Of course.
This is between Ironman and Redbud. This is Chase Sexton's home track. He's from that area. He's from Illinois.
Yep.
So he's should be used to this track. He should be used to riding these conditions. And like you said, this track does get pretty technical. They are adding a new section in. They're going through the woods like the Combine kids did last year.
Yep.
And I think it's definitely going to play into Chase Sexton's hand. Hunter Lawrence, obviously very good, going to get a great start, just like he does every single moto. But I still think that Chase comes out on top. He's kind of had his number here for the last couple weeks. And you can kind of tell Hunter's getting frustrated. He kind of thought once Jet was gone, once Little Bro was gone, he was going to be the guy, but it's not quite gone that way. And I see Chase, like I said, I see him taking the win. I see him taking the championship. I think he gets it. He gets my nod. He's going to win. Stamp it, honestly.
Yeah, no, I like him to win the race. And if he wins the race, he wins the championship. It's kind of a chicken and the egg thing. But I also think that he's smart enough that if the race isn't there, that it's the I'd rather win the war than that one particular battle. And I think that's sound advice that you can give to anyone in a position like that. other points sort of battles are also just as kind of far apart. Like, Aaron Plessinger is just over 20 points adrift from Justin Cooper, so I don't think any of this is going to be changing there as far as a third spot. And Jason Anderson is 9 points back of Cooper, so I don't see that there being a 9-point swing there either, unless something seriously happens to either one of those guys. Before we hang this thing up, let's talk more cross the nations. This is something that I didn't really spring on you whatsoever, but
yeah, no worries.
Yeah, we can have this conversation. I think
I do want to say one thing before we switch gears and
go for it.
I think we need to put some respect on Justin Cooper.
Absolutely,
that dude has really. I wasn't sure.
Rookie season.
You know, when he came into the 450 class, I wasn't sure where he was going to fit in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was like, man, he's a great rider. I think he's an amazing 250 rider. Obviously, he was a champion. But I'm like, man, I don't know where he fits in this class, because you have the Chase, you have the Hunter Lawrences, AP, Jason Anderson, Malcolm, Eli, all the Ken Rocks and all these guys. I'm like, man, is he better than them? I don't know. But, man, he's been putting it up there, and his results have really shown. He had a pretty gnarly crash at Bud's, which I didn't see, but I saw plenty after. For him to come back and get fourth in the second moto, I think that really says a lot about how good he's been riding this year, and he's gotten great starts every single moto. Obviously, he crashed pretty much battling for the lead on the first lap. I really think that people, you know, he kind of has flown under the radar, and people really need to put some respect on this dude. He's gnarly, and he's great on a 450. I think he's only going to get better from here. I hope he does. Yeah. You know, I really hope he does get better, because he's impressed me a ton, and he deserves to be where he's at.
Justin Cooper strikes me as a guy who is going to adapt to the 450 better as his career continues to go on, and he's already having a great season as a rookie. I've been really impressed with him. I'm impressed with his fitness. I'm impressed with how smooth he is on the 450, and that's why I think that he'll only continue to grow with that machine. Average qualifying inside the top five, tied for the most hole shots out of everyone in the 450 class right now, and he's also got plenty of laps led on top of that. Inside the top five as a rookie, as a 450 rookie, I think that's pretty good in my books, and only improvement to come as far as what I consider for Justin Cooper. I've liked what I've seen.
Yeah, I think there's like one or two things missing. I don't know what it is. I'm not a professional motocross rider. There's just one or two things missing that as soon as he figures it out, whether it's bike setup, whether it's fitness, whether it's something in his technique, I don't know, whatever. He's going to be competing for wins more so than he already is, in my opinion. Obviously, he's led a lot of laps, like you were saying, but he's never been able to seal the deal and put a stamp on it. But like I said, I think one or two things, whatever he finds, whether it, you know, be training or testing it, I think he's going to compete for wins. And does he beat Jet? I don't know. Jet's obviously a freak, but he's really shown to everyone that he deserves to be on a star Yamaha ride. And he is a top dude, no doubt.
And he's no slouch at Ironman either. He has a few second places there. He's led laps at that racetrack. And like the last round with like championship things going on and stuff like that, don't be surprised if there's sort of someone that comes out of the woodwork and just goes and wins this thing. Like I kind of see this race as being a different version of what we've seen in a many different occasions with the East-West shootout at the end of the year for the 125 Supercross. Andrew Short has a pair of those wins with no championships to his credit. I think that might have been the only Supercross, 125 Supercross he ended up winning, was he ended up winning the shootout twice. When you push everyone together, he'd come out on top because it's just pressure-free and you just go out there and ride. I could easily see Justin Cooper going ahead and grabbing himself a win while everyone else is worried about championships and worrying about the playoffs and stuff like that. But now can we talk about more Cross Nations?
Yeah, absolutely. I had to get that off my chest, honestly. I almost tweeted it the other day, but I was like, I already tweeted once today. I can't do two in one day. You know what I mean? Like, that's too much.
I get you. So who are you sending?
What's that?
Who are you sending? Canada's team is already set. We've got the world's oldest. It could have been older if we went with Medags, but we have Wright, Pettis, and a 250 rider that is the same age as me in Kevin Benoit. Who are you sending from the U.S.?
Chase AP Deegs.
Deegs ain't going.
We'll see. I'm no industry insider by any means, but at least from what I listened to today, there's a chance. If he doesn't go.
Okay, so if he wants to go or is going, he's like, that is absolutely the number one prospect coming out of the States for on a 250. Like
he's my 250 pick.
Sure.
And I would love to see him do battle with like DeWolf, the Coens, there's another
Langenfelder
guy who rides there's another Yamaha rider over there. I'm blanking on the name. I don't follow GP super closely, but I know a couple of the guys. I think, and even Everett's, I want to see him do battle with those guys. That's the best 250 riders in the world. Now, if he doesn't go, I send Levi.
Kawasaki ain't going.
You know. Yeah, I know. That's been a problem in the past, and I think you just kind of go down the list there, and I think Chance is the next guy.
I think it would be Chance, yeah. I think if it's not Deegs, it's Chance. And
yeah,
I think Honda gets behind that, no problem.
I said it already, Jake Coop was a gnarly 250 guy.
Put him on 250. Rode one not that long ago.
Yeah. Put him on a 250 and send him. I think, I want to say I read this, that he said he would do it. If push came to shove and he wanted to go to MXOM, he would do it on a 250. And I'm totally okay with that. But for my 450 guys, I got to go Chase and AP. I would love to send Eli. Huge Eli Tomac fan. He's your favorite rider. He's my favorite rider. He's everyone's favorite rider.
He's your favorite rider's favorite rider.
Yeah, pretty much. Like Tyler Stepik was like, I love Eli Tomac. When he passes me on the track and he laps me, I'm like, dang, that guy rips. I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, he just coming off an injury, he obviously is not completely in shape. He would have enough time to be in shape by then. He went 4:11 at Buds Creek. He obviously has the speed still. That was shown pretty clearly in the first moto, regardless of whether he got tired or not. It was super freaking hot. So that probably had something to do with his second moto performance. But I'd be curious to see what he does this weekend at Ironman. If he goes out and wins, then, you know, maybe that changes my thoughts. But as of right now, it's Chase for sure, AP, hopefully Deegs. But if not, you know, I'll send Jake Coop on a 250 if none of these other guys want to go.
Could see that. I would be pumped to see Jake Coop on a 250. I think he'd do well. Closing remarks. Are you going to be at Ironman? I know you've got that year-long pass to for as far as media goes. I know you want to use it as many times as you can. Or are you retired for the remainder of the 2024 season?
I didn't get to use it as much as I liked. And unfortunately, I won't be at Ironman.
Charlotte?
I will be at Charlotte. My cousin's getting married this Saturday, so I do have to go to that. That is, you know, family first.
Ah, yes.
But we will be in Charlotte. I don't know if I'm shooting or not yet, but I'm going at least because that's kind of close. And Charlotte is a super cool area. I've been there multiple times for, you know, some NASCAR racing back in the day. It's a cool spot. Z-Max is a really cool venue. The whole area is usually pretty fired up on anything with a motor. So I'm excited to get back there. It's been a long time since I've been to Charlotte, and I got a camping pass that's right on the track. I might be able to see the track from the top of my motorhome. We'll see.
I like that. But, I've actually been on top of your motorhome.
Yes, yes, you have. Many people have. May have gotten a couple beers up there once or twice.
All right. Well, for the Big MX Radio faithful, for Cody Groves and everybody else who absolutely loves Wade Rayner, thank you so much for making time for the podcast, my friend.
Yeah, man, it's been fun. I'm glad to come on here anytime. It's great to talk to you. It's great to talk moto, and it's been fun, man.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Thank you so much for making time for this. This has been fun. We're going to do this again sometime soon. Maybe we'll do like a race review of one of the Charlotte round if you happen to be at that one, or something else down the road. But thanks so much, man. Don't hang up just yet. But for podcast sake, we're going to cut things off right there.
Welcome to Best 42 in the land. All ages from kids up to grown men. Walk through the gates of the coal miner's daughter to make a point clearer than the creek water. Who's the best? Who's it gonna be? In Hurricane Mills, Tennessee. Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wheel spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Times this one week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins. Do what you gotta do for 20 plus 2 out at the ranch. Golf carts, pit bikes, and rowdy fans. Play the national anthem and everybody stands. Smell the smoke from the two strokes riding by. The 30-second card's on its side.
It's time to get it.
Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wheel spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling.